So Visions and Variations has three pieces on it, and one of them is a set of variations, and one of them is a set of visions, and one of them is a set of variations that has been, I would say, subjected to a vision. So we start the album with the Britten Variations on a theme of Frank Bridge, and another of the big works is Prokofiev's Vision Fugitive, which are 20 little tiny slices of personality, and they're actually composed to describe some of his friends, which is super fun. And right there in the middle, we have Mozart's variations on A vous dirai-je maman, or Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. The original French lyrics are apparently actually quite X-rated. And those variations, we gave them to a colleague of ours and said, hey, you know, can you make us a little arrangement? This was for a concert a couple of years ago. He is a brilliant character with a crazy mind. And he had recently become really involved in improv comedy, and he was thinking about characters and thinking about context, and he came back with this insane piece for us in which every member of the ensemble plays a completely different line. And the variations start out pretty regular, kind of like verbatim Mozart, but then before you know it, you have these sort of tricks that are being thrown in, and over time it just becomes utterly radiant and completely wacky. And as soon as we got this, we performed it, we loved it, and we said, God, we got to get this out. More people have to hear this. More people have to experience this utter lunacy.
It's such a cool piece. It really feels like a unspooling and then stitching back together.
Totally. Totally feel that way.
And do you perform that piece often? Or
we
just
have
the
performed
ones?
It a couple of times now. And it is a challenging piece to perform with everybody on their own part. You know, there's a lot to coordinate. And audiences love it. It's a very lovable piece. And yeah, it was written for us. Ethan Wood is the arranger slash composer. We asked him to arrange this piece, and he ended up writing us really a brilliant kind of a new piece, which is amazing. But Ethan really intimately knows us, the musicians of A Far Cry, the criers, as we call ourselves. And I think he wrote a piece with us in mind, with specific people in mind for specific parts. And that really shows, I think, in the music and the way that our orchestra is able to approach this piece. It just feels right. It feels personal and wonderful.
Absolutely. So I know that you've performed the Britten piece pretty regularly. Is that correct?
Yeah. The Britten's a real staple. We've been performing it since, I think, our second season. And every couple of years, we say to ourselves, oh, surely it's time to do it again. And it's just, I mean, it's a tour de force for string orchestra. And what's so awesome about the Britten in particular is that he really puts the orchestra through its paces. You have the simple theme, and it translates into every possible imaginable form before finally sort of coming back to its true radiant self. So a huge pleasure to play that piece.
It's really cool. I had never heard it before when I heard it on the album, and was really excited about it when I did hear it.
Ah, thank you for letting us be your introduction to that incredible piece. That's so, hearing something like that, I don't know, hearing something like that always makes you feel really good. It's like, we did something good.
Well, this is why we, you know, whenever we release an album, it's because we need more people to hear this music, and we really strongly believe in every album that we have put out. And often it's out of a desire to, you know, this music is so amazing, I don't think enough people know about this. We have to make an album. And so it worked in this case.
So I understand you kickstarted the funding for this album, right?
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the challenges or fun parts about doing that?
Oh, Kickstarters are the scariest kind of fun. Anyone who's ever done one, do you want to talk about that crazy graph?
Well, just to make sure everyone realizes, when you do a Kickstarter, you don't get the money unless you meet your goal. And so you're really putting yourself out there. You have a lot of exposure, and you have to work really hard to make sure the word gets around and make sure everyone feels like they're getting on this train that's this unstoppable force. And it is the best. 319 people together donated over $30,000 to enable us to record and produce and promote and release this album on our own record label. And it is the most gratifying thing, just to feel like this is a really tangible sign that what we're doing is resonating with people. And it's certainly gratifying that people want more from A Far Cry and want more of just great music in the world.
So how were both or either of you personally involved in the Kickstarter campaign?
We were definitely part of the on-the-ground team. One of my roles in A Far Cry is to manage the social media account. So you better believe I was updating it basically every day, pushing certain rewards. That part is super fun. Everybody in the group basically came forward with some sort of really unique and wonderful award that people could get. I was lucky enough to be the recipient of Jesse's, which was a beer tasting of unique Vermont beers. And I'm sending out into the world a whole selection of different teas. I'm sort of a tea nut. But there was all kinds of stuff. People were baking loaves of sourdough bread. People were roasting coffee. People obviously were offering lessons. It's a real kind of everyone get in the room. Everyone bring something to the table. Let's make this happen. I mean, what Jesse said about a whole team of people just kind of rising up to support you, it really turns out to be a team effort. And it is a little nail-biting because there's always a dry period in the middle where your initial supporters have supported you, and that's great. And then it sort of plateaus just a little. And you know that once you sort of send out the things to say, okay, guys, the deadline is on such and such a day, you know that figure's going to go up. But man, waiting for it and sort of pressing go and hoping that more people will show up, it's the scariest part of doing a Kickstarter. But it is exciting.
We did one Kickstarter before this one, which was actually for our initial release on Cryo Records. And that one was called, Dreams and Prayers. Visions and Variations, Dreams and Prayers. We have a little theme going on.
Yeah.
Anyway. We were successful, and we raised the money, we released the album, and that album got nominated for a Grammy. So that was quite a coup, you know, to have our first self-produced in-house album get that widespread attention and recognition. And so we were delighted to go back to the Kickstarter well, and I think we did better on this second album. You know, it was 4 years ago, I think, was the Dreams and Prayers experience. We're just delighted that the community rose up in support to help us bring Visions and Variations into the world.
Was there a moment or a favorite aspect of recording this album for either of you? Something that you particularly loved about doing it?
I wouldn't say that there's one particular moment. What's funny about a recording is that at the same time, it's unbelievably intimate because you're not really performing for anyone at that moment. It's just you and the microphone, which is kind of how I feel right now. And you know, it's going to get edited, like a whole bunch of stuff can happen. But at the same time, it's a paradox being in there. Because what you want at the end of the day from a recording is you want it to feel just kind of fresh and spontaneous. And yet you kind of create that freshness and spontaneity through sometimes like several different takes, and sometimes through a combination of like crunching in and doing the technical stuff, and other times doing a version where you just like let the technicality of it go and just play wrong notes but have, you know, an immense amount of musicality to it. So for me, it's just the whole experience from start to finish. It's such a unique experience. There's nothing else like it. And recording engineers are gods.
Agreed.
Yeah, I have two little moments that were two of my favorites. The first being that initial moment of entering the hall for the first time, when it just all kind of hits you at once, like this is happening, we are making this record. Mechanics Hall in Worcester is where we recorded this album, and it's a gorgeous space. It's a large space. You know, we could easily have a hockey game in there. But it's all polished wood and red velvet.
Red velvet, God.
And just entering this pretty cavernous space and hearing the acoustic of people talking to each other and seeing the setup, seeing these towers of microphones and the stands all arranged just so. And it took my breath away. And I love that tingle, that feeling like this is really happening. It's time to go. On the flip side, it's easy to get in your own head when you're in a recording session, and you feel a lot of pressure. You feel you got to get it right in a certain amount of time. And one of our violinists started a little tradition. As you can imagine, it is important when you are in front of a microphone in a recording session to have your phone off, so that your phone doesn't ring in the middle of something and ruin everything. So, you know, your phone can be in airplane mode. That's fine. One of our violinists took it upon himself at the very beginning of every session, so after every little break, after lunch, he had composed a little poem about the importance of putting your phone into airplane mode. And it was just so fun. By the end of the session, different people were submitting their own rhymes and limericks. And it was a nice way to relieve some of the pressure, relieve some tension, and just be as a group together in this space.
Did you write your own poem?
I sure did. I can't remember it, I'm afraid.
Okay.
But it was, it was fun.
Yeah, I can't remember a single one right now. I'm sitting here thinking, after lunch, coming back to rehearsal can seem like a heavy load. Make sure to put your phone in airplane mode. This is that kind of thing.
It's just perfect.
Yeah. It was lovely. You would wait for the first rhyme and everything would kind of click into place.
That's a neat little ritual.
It may come back. We'll see.
So if you don't mind, I'd like to shift gears a little bit and talk about your upcoming concert, Portraits, at the Gardner Museum. Tell me a little bit about what you're playing.
Sure. Portraits is at the museum, at the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum, September 8 and September 9, Saturday and Sunday. And it's a great program. It features music really based on visual art, based on, in many cases, actual literal portraits. But I think in every case, like based on some kind of artwork, the piece I perhaps am looking most forward to is actually a world premiere, a commission by Jessica Meyer, who's a wonderful violist and composer and friend of a Far Cry, who had a residency at the museum last year, I believe, and took the opportunity to study one of the portraits of the museum's collection, and inspired by that, write a piece for a Far Cry. And we haven't started working on it yet, but we have received the music and it looks amazing. And yeah, I'm pumped for that one.
I'm super excited about that one. The title of the piece, which just came to us recently, is called Grasping for Light. And one of the things that a lot of people don't know about Isabella Stewart Gardner is that she actually lost a child when the child was very young, and fell into a deep depression. And out of that depression, I think a doctor basically said to her and her husband, like, you guys got to get out of Boston. You got to get on the road. Like, go travel the world. Like, go, get out of here, go. And they did. They hit the road and they traveled, and they really started to form this relationship with art and the seeds of the idea of bringing some of what they were seeing and experiencing back to Boston and to create this, you know, this utterly unique, magical museum. And actually, Jessica had pointed out to me in a conversation last spring that one of the sort of heartbreaking things about the museum is that there are a lot of pictures there of the Virgin Mary and her kid. There are lots of, like, kind of mother and child. That's a theme that you can sort of find as you walk through the museum. And knowing the backstory, that just hits you like a ton of bricks. At the end of the day, Jessica picked a very different picture to be inspired by. But the idea of Isabella sort of basically clawing her way out and kind of rediscovering a source of meaning in her life and sort of holding fast to it, like, all of that is in this piece. I'm so curious to start playing it and just hear the sounds that Jessica will have come up with to make that happen.
What painting did she base this music off of?
It's a Whistler painting. It's a painting of a horizon, and there are actually layers. There's sort of layers of gray in this painting, almost like a watercolor, although I think the painting itself is not watercolor. But there's this sense of layering and of light. And you can actually see lights on the water and these sort of like distant lights in the distance. I think she sort of, I don't know the details. At a certain point, it turns to speculation, but you can kind of imagine standing in front of a painting like that in the same way that you might sort of stand on the shore of a body of water and sort of feel the sense of distance and sort of look at these lights and I don't know. Got to take it from there. I don't know what happens after that.
We'll see soon enough.
Yes, exactly.
We're also doing a piece that I'm personally really excited about, which is perhaps one of the least likely pieces I can think of, which is Pictures at an Exhibition, which is this incredible, orchestral showcase by Mussorgsky. And, the famous version for full orchestra has a full brass section and it's incredibly colorful. Like, this is one of the orchestral showpieces. And somebody took it upon themselves to arrange it for a string orchestra. I am so tickled because as a string orchestra, we can make a lot of interesting sounds. String instruments are extremely flexible, and that's why we're flooding the front of the stage in every orchestra. Like, we can do a lot. So I can't wait to see I just can't wait to play this piece. I love Pictures at an Exhibition. It was one of my favorite pieces as a kid growing up, and the promenade, the great trumpet solo, and it's just so good.
And the way you keep coming back to the promenade, you see a few pictures and then you get pulled out of that reality and you're back in the promenade and you sort of have this fourth wall moment, like, oh, wait, oh, this is meta, guys.
Yeah, so just how this is going to work with a string orchestra, I can't wait to see. I have no doubt it'll be good. I've been looking forward to this for at least a year now. Almost there.